Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Maddux is back. Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily source of news, notes, and updates on all things Major League Baseball. I'm Troy Brock, your host. You can follow me on Twitter X at Troy B Baseball. He is Drew Crabtree. You can follow him on the X Machine at Drew Crabtree 12. And we're going to get to Nathan Eovaldi throwing a Maddux yesterday against Drew's Reds. We're going to get to another blow to the Atlanta Braves. I forgot to mention it in my 20-minute diatribe about the team yesterday, and even more news came out about it last night. We're going to get to that and Drew's thoughts on the Braves, and we're going to get to some hot starts in baseball for a couple of hitters and a couple of pitching staffs. So if you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment, join the conversation, hit that subscribe button, turn on that notification icon. We are trying to reach 500 subscriptions before the end of April, so help us hit that milestone. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends. Go to firstpitchpodcast.com for news, notes, and updates on all things Major League Baseball. How are we doing today, Drew?
Oh, you know, the child is teething, so she's making everybody's issue, so we're a little bit sleepy. Yeah. I am a little frustrated with my Reds after getting Maddux'd last night, but, you know, it's a new day. We got the man, the myth, the legend himself pitching on a getaway game before a crucial 4-game set against the Brewers. So, you know, it is what it is, coming to you live from beautiful Toledo, Ohio.
I hear you. Yeah, and speaking of that Maddux, man, Nathan Eovaldi had it last night, and he was just magnificent. A complete game shutout, the first complete game shutout in Major League Baseball this year. 4 hits, 8 strikeouts against the Cincinnati Reds, who, contrary to probably popular belief, aren't that easy to shut out, especially with the game that Ellie De La Cruz had the night before with, what was it, 7 RBI? Or was it more than that?
Yeah, 7.
7 RBI? Yeah, so.
Yeah, man, it wasn't the best performance by the Reds by far, but this is also not super surprising. So last year, I looked this up. Last year, the Reds went for at least 9 runs. Where did I have it pulled up? I had it just now pulled up. And they were shut out in the subsequent game 3 times. And then they only scored 1 run 3 other times. I don't know if it's a mental thing where they think, hey, we put up 14 yesterday, so we can just take today off. We're all right. But no, seriously, credit to Nathan Eovaldi. The man was on fire. He was attacking the zone. He got what seemed like 15,000 ground outs. There was just nothing that the Reds could do in the batter's box outside of maybe don't swing at the first pitch. Eovaldi had a number of short at-bats with few pitches in them. That helps when it comes to going the distance, especially in the 5th game of the season. He looked fantastic. It's unfortunate that Carson Spires, who has maybe 2 or 3 good games a season, if he has that many opportunities this year, it was wasted. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say my normal thing where Carson Spires deserves better, like I do with Hunter Green, because Hunter does deserve better. Carson Spires is the 5th starter, and if you're going to get 5 innings of 1-run baseball out of Carson Spires, and the 1 run being a solo shot in the 1st inning, you take that every day. It just so happens that Nathan Eovaldi was not missing. It was difficult to watch, but at the same time, you have to respect it, because 1-0 baseball games, as much as people clown on, you know, low scoring games, it was a hell of a baseball game to watch. The pitching matchup was significantly better than what you would expect, and still reasons for optimism, but you know, just sometimes you lose baseball games. It tends to happen.
It does tend to happen over the course of a 162-game season. And, yeah, I agree with you. I love pitching duels, so a 1-0 ball game is right up my alley. And, yeah, as you said, Nathan Eovaldi had it last night. He generated 18 whiffs on 55 swings, a 33% whiff rate, as well as 15 called strikes for a 33% called strike plus whiff rate. So, you know, that's just outstanding performance. It was just over 3 pitches per plate appearance. He faced 30 batters at 99 pitches, and it was just a fantastic performance from Nathan Eovaldi in his second start of the year. He now has a ERA of 1.2 going into the first couple of weeks of the season, and it's a great start for Nathan Eovaldi and exactly what that Texas Rangers rotation needed from Eovaldi, especially, you know, with not being sure if Jacob DeGrom is going to be able to stay healthy for the whole year. And also, as you pointed out, Carson Spires, not to be outdone and not to be overlooked here in his outing, he also generated a lot of called strikes and whiffs. He got 11 whiffs on 37 swings, a 30% whiff rate, and 11 called strikes for a 26% called strike plus whiff rate. And he had a strong outing, 6 innings, 3 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, and the only run coming on a solo home run from Wyatt Langford. And that's a guy that you expect to hit a lot of home runs this year, is Wyatt Langford. So it was just a fantastic pitching duel all around. And yeah, there is a lot to look forward to for the Reds, especially in today's game. Today, the Reds and Rangers, as you said, it's getaway day there in Cincinnati, and it's Jack Leiter at Hunter Green. And that's going to be a game that I am watching today, because I talked about it last week when Jack Leiter started. I'm high on Jack Leiter, and Hunter Green deserves better. So it's I'm looking forward to that one. Do you have any how do you feel about this game today?
So it was a stat that came out in the opening series that the Reds have lost what seems like, I think, 30 series in a row where they lose game one. Now, obviously, they won game one in this series, and I'd have to double check the stats, but I don't know why. It's just this feeling that they just do not win game threes. They don't win getaway games. I think it's usually more of a Sunday thing than it is a Wednesday thing. But if there's going to be someone that can overcome that, or at least get them in the position to win, it's going to be Hunter Green. And if we go based on that first start, I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Hunter Green. Obviously, only one start. But he's attacking the zone now. He's actually going after batters. He threw the fastball a lot more than he did last year, because his secondary stuff just wasn't there, and it worked in that opening day start. He's a little bit more efficient, which is something that I've always knocked him for, because it just seems like he always battles with these 5-6 pitch at bats, just trying to dink and dunk and just perfectly place every pitch. I'm just like, Hunter, you've got the stuff. You've got the ability to just overpower these batters. Go get them. This is obviously a Rangers lineup that, you know, if you screw up, they will make you pay. So I think he'll be all right. And he'll put the Reds in a position to win. Now, Jack Leiter, you can say the exact same.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a game I'm looking forward to. I'm high on Jack Leiter. I'm high on Hunter Green. That game today is at 12:40 p.m. Eastern. You can find it on your regional networks there for the Rangers or the Reds, or on MLB.tv. And just to look around the rest of the league from yesterday, we got a few requests, Drew, to go over some of the scores from the previous day's games, and so we'll start doing that moving forward. That Rangers-Reds game did finish with a 1-0 final score. The Mets and the Marlins, the Marlins won that one 4-2. Did not expect that. It was slated to be a good pitching matchup with Kodai Senga and Sandy Alcantara, and Sandy Alcantara gets the dub. Pirates and Rays won 7-0. Shane Boz struck out 10 in his season debut. D-Bags and Yankees. The D-Bags won 7-5. That one was Corbin Burns' debut with the D-Bags, and the win came on a come-from-behind grand slam late from Eugenio Suarez, and we'll talk about him some more a little later. Blue Jays took down the Nationals 5-3. Jeff Hoffman gets his second save of the year. The Twins get one in the win column over the White Sox, and they win 8-3. The Brewers get one in the win column, their first win of the year. They win 5-0 over the Royals. Good leading into y'all series that they get a couple wins, right? The Angels continue their winning ways over the Cardinals, and the Angels won that one 9-7. The Giants, Logan Webb and Hayden Wisniewski, Giants at Astros. I watched that game last night, the first six innings of it anyway. It was a very good game. Wisniewski did well in his team debut, even though he did pick up the loss. Giants won 3-1. Padres continue to be undefeated. They beat the Guardians 7-0. Michael King had a fantastic outing after a rough outing in his first start of the year. The Detroit Tigers beat the Seattle Mariners. Casey Mize beat Logan Gilbert 4-1. The Chicago Cubs continue their winning ways. They beat the Athletics 7-4 with Kyle Tucker's fourth home run in as many games. And it's a nice stretch from him. We'll talk about him a little later, too. Justin Steele also had a decent outing. And then the Braves continue to not win as the Dodgers continue to win. And Chris Sale picked up his first loss of the year as the Dodgers beat the Braves 3-1. But we will go ahead and talk about those Braves because, like I said, I forgot to mention Reynaldo Lopez in my 20-minute diatribe yesterday about the team. And he was shut down with some shoulder inflammation prior to yesterday's podcast. And then it came out also yesterday evening that he is now going to need surgery. Tweet from Mark Bowman, Reynaldo Lopez will undergo arthroscopic surgery on his right shoulder to determine if he has any structural damage. Imaging only showed inflammation. Timetable for return won't be known until after surgery. You can expect him to miss at least a couple of months. So it still does not end for the Atlanta Braves. And I even texted a friend of the podcast, Lindsey Crosby, last night when that news broke. And I said, it never ends. And he said, you're right. It never ends. And it's been rough for the Atlanta Braves. And losing Reynaldo Lopez while they still don't have Spencer Strider back, it's going to be rough for a couple of weeks. But they should have Spencer Strider back soon. But man, Drew, what do you think about the Braves and just how unlucky they've been over the past year plus?
I like to clown on the Reds medical staff because they are legitimately awful. But the Braves have had some seriously bad luck. It's not like they're overall a bad team. Now they're not playing like a good team as of late. But yeah, that the injury issues that they're having right now are just ridiculous. They're not obviously as bad as the White Sox having an entire rotation's worth of pitchers on season-ending IL because they need Tommy John. But just, I don't know, man. This is, obviously too early. I think that the Braves will be fine. In the long run, especially once they get Strider back, but you know, this I hate to see teams just implode because of injury because it's not a good reflection on how good they are because you know we think that the Braves are going to be all right, but they've run into two buzzsaws to start the year, and if they get swept tonight, you know they'll be 0-7, but the teams, assuming the Padres win again today, are both undefeated. Now, thankfully, they've got the Fish, the Marlins up next, and then obviously your Phillies. So they should be able to get on the winning side of the scoreboard at some point. I don't think they're going to go 0-162, but yeah, the Braves have just had some seriously awful luck to start this season, but I think they'll dig their way out. Maybe Stuart Fairchild will help him.
Yes, former Red Stuart Fairchild. But this 0-6 start, it ties the longest stretch to start a season without a win and to finish the season while making the playoffs. So no other team has lost more than six games to start a season and subsequently made the playoffs in the same season. It's tough, man, but I do still think the Braves are a playoff team, and they just had a stretch of bad luck that has been going on for so long, and it just never seems to end. But when you take a step back and look at the Profar suspension as well as the Reynaldo Lopez injury, yes, they suck, and yes, they are extremely bad luck for the Braves, and it just continues. But at the same time, Profar, while he was their biggest offseason acquisition this year, he's not going to be the game changer in the lineup, and he never was going to be the game changer in the lineup. He's a nice spark plug for the lineup, and he's serving as a good leadoff. He was serving as a good leadoff hitter while Acuna is still out. But he was going to move down to the bottom half of the lineup whenever Acuna came back. And for Reynaldo Lopez, once Spencer Strider comes back, Reynaldo Lopez becomes the fourth best starter in that rotation behind Chris Sale, Spencer Strider, and Spencer Schwellenbach. So it does suck, and it is a continuation of the string of bad luck. But at the same time, missing out on those guys isn't as bad as it could be. It could be worse. It could be Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuna Jr. missing the whole season again like they did last year, or Matt Olson, which their offense is really bad right now. But I do expect them to turn it around because they have that capability. But, you know, there are some teams that have pitched above their capabilities to this point in the season, and you kind of touched on one of them earlier with a rotation's worth of guys on the injured list with Tommy John surgery. But the Chicago White Sox and the Colorado Rockies, to this point in the season, they have played 9 games combined between them. They have a total of 50 innings from their starting pitchers, and they have allowed 4 earned runs amongst all of their starting pitchers combined. An ERA sub 1 from their starting pitchers combined. Is this going to be normal for the year? Is this going to be what the Chicago White Sox and the Colorado Rockies do for the rest of the year? Is this a small sample size nugget? Like, what are we looking at with this here, Drew? This was unexpected.
It's very unexpected, but yeah, no, this is a itty bitty tiny little sample size. I still expect both of those teams to finish at the bottom of their respective divisions. Like, Colorado's obviously still 1-3, so even with a great rotation, if this holds up, they're still losing a lot of games. And sure, the White Sox lead the AL Central, or at least they did heading into play yesterday. It's going to level out, and it's fun. It's definitely fun to watch, and if they can continue it, it's going to be incredibly fun to watch. It'll all level out, and both teams will end up selling off stars to continue their perpetual rebuilds. And you know, things will be right in the world. But it's definitely fun to watch. That's one thing that's great about baseball, is you have these random things that happen. But once, you know, people start shaking off the winter rust, and the contenders and the teams that are actually trying to win start to win, it'll even off a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. For a little context there, the Chicago White Sox are 2-3, and they are tied in a 4-way tie for the lead in the American League Central with the Guardians, Tigers, and Royals. Only the Minnesota Twins are worse at 1-4. And for what it's worth, the Chicago White Sox are the only team in that division with a positive run differential of +9. Now, I do agree with you. This is a small sample size early season type thing, where I don't see this continuing for either team either. Now, could the Chicago White Sox be better than they were last year? Let's hope so. It'd be hard to be worse than they were last year, because they were historically the worst team in the history of baseball. But they've done fairly well to this point in the season. And yes, their competition hasn't been the best. They started playing the Los Angeles Angels, and now they're playing the Minnesota Twins. But at the same time, you know, they have done well against the teams that they have been on the field with. And, you know, a lot of people like to say, well, you can only beat the teams that you played. And to this point, they played sucky teams and they beat them. So I don't expect it to continue. It is crazy to look at, and something crazy to look at that, well, you can realistically expect to continue is the hot stretches that Eugenio Suarez and Kyle Tucker have been on so far this year. Eugenio Suarez has 5 home runs this year through his 5 games. And as I said earlier, he did hit a go-ahead grand slam against the Yankees in last night's ballgame for his 5th home run. He is hitting .278 with 5 home runs and 11 RBIs. All 5 of his hits have been home runs. And for Kyle Tucker, he's got a home run in each of his last 4 games. He has 4 home runs on the year through 8 games. He has a .353 batting average, 11 RBI, and 12 hits. 9 of them have been for extra bases, 4 have been the home run, and 5 doubles. Out of these 2 players, Kyle Tucker and Eugenio Suarez, which one do you think is more likely to keep up the current pace that they're on?
I want to say Eugenio Suarez because I love him. I loved his time in Cincinnati. I love the vibes that he brings, and I love that he's always playing with a smile. I have to go with Kyle Tucker. He's been a bit more consistent. He posted 3 straight 5+ BWAR seasons with the Astros between 21 and 23, and then his down year was 4.7, and then Gino has never gone over 4.1, and that was in his first season in Seattle. The 5 hits all being home runs is something that's obviously going to be what you look at, because he's not going to hit home runs with every swing of the bat. As much fun as it would be, because that's MLB The Show on, you know, Rookie, which is what some people play on. Not me, maybe, possibly, who knows. But I think that it's going to be Kyle Tucker. And, you know, you text me that Kyle Tucker, when he was traded to the Cubs, and I was just like, whatever. It's the Cubs. Yeah, I'm probably going to eat those words really hard this year, because he's going to be one of the best players in the NL Central with very little competition. He's on a ridiculous tear, and if there's anyone that's going to not come back down to earth, it'll be the Cubs, just because of how winnable the Central is, and also the fact that everybody plays everybody, so you get that equal crack on all the really bad teams. I would much prefer it be Eugenio Suarez, just because of him and the fact that Kyle Tucker plays in the Central. But yeah, I think Kyle Tucker is in for a good season if he's able to at least maintain something close to how he started, and that's very annoying as a Reds fan.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic stretch for both of these guys, but I do agree with you that I think it'll be Kyle Tucker who continues this pace. Well, maybe not this pace exactly, but somewhere pretty close to it. But for what it's worth, you know, Eugenio Suarez has played in all 5 of the Diamondbacks games this season. All 5 of his hits have been home runs, and that does put him on pace for 162 home runs this year. So that'll be fun to watch. Of course, I agree. I don't think he'll get there, but you know, having Eugenio Suarez back to the level of home runs when he hit 49 in the rabbit ball year with Cincinnati, you know, that'll be fun to watch. If he does break 30, it would be the 2nd time in as many years, and it would be the 6th time in his career. And I also like Eugenio Suarez. He's one of the Diamondbacks players that I do like. I love Kyle Tucker, man. I'm very high on Kyle Tucker. I'm a little biased because my wife is, of course, from Houston and an Astros fan, but I do love Kyle Tucker, and he's one of my favorite players in baseball, stemming from his time with the Astros. And I've always been high on him and thought he was going to be very good. And he kind of turned it on last year in a injury shortened year. And I actually wrote about the Chicago Cubs and Houston Astros trade in today's newsletter. So I will leave the description I will leave the link in the description for the newsletter, so make sure you subscribe there. It is free, though we do accept paid memberships. They help keep the lights on around here if you are kind enough to grace us with a paid membership. But yes, that's about it for today's show. I'm going to read through the games we have on the docket for today and see if anything sticks out to us before we get out of here. And we have the Reds and Rangers first on the docket with Jack Leiter and Hunter Green. We've already talked about that game. Paul Skeens and Ryan Pepiot, Pirates and Rays at 1:10 Eastern. Royals and Brewers, Cole Reagans and Freddie Peralta at 1:10 Eastern. Angels and Cardinals, not much to talk about there, 1:15 Eastern. Twins and White Sox, 2:10 Eastern. Nationals and Blue Jays, Mackenzie Gore looking to prove that it was not just the shadows on opening day, that it was him too, and that's at 3:07 p.m. Eastern. Guardians and Padres, Ben Lively at Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease looking to have a bounce-back start, and Ben Lively making his second start of the year after having a surprise opening day start at 4:10 Eastern. Tigers and Mariners, Tarik Skubal and Luis Castillo. Tarik Skubal looking to have a bounce-back start. That game's at 4:10 Eastern. Giants at Astros, Framber Valdez getting his second start of the year. That game's at 4:10 Eastern. Mets and Marlins, Clay Holmes looking to bounce back. That game's at 4:40 Eastern. It's a good team to bounce back against, if I do say so myself. Red Sox and Orioles, Garrett Crochet making his second start of the year and first start since signing the extension with the Red Sox. That game's at 6:35 Eastern. Rockies at Phillies. Wheeler on the mound for the Phillies and Kyle Freeland for the Rockies. That game's at 6:45 Eastern. We'll be watching that one. D-bags and Yankees, Zach Allen looking to bounce back against Carlos Rodon, who, of course, had that fantastic start on opening day against the Milwaukee Brewers, and that game is at 7:05 Eastern. And then the Braves and the Dodgers, Bryce Elder at Blake Snell. Bryce Elder getting called up after the Reynaldo Lopez injury, and he is making the start today, looking to help the Braves get a win in the win column. And that game is at 8:38 Eastern. And I did miss the Cubs and Athletics because of the way this website has it lined up. Jameson Taillon is on the mound for the Cubs, and that game is at 3:35 Eastern. Anything stand out to you in today's docket of games there, Drew?
Well, other than the Hunter Green, Jack Leiter matchup that we talked about earlier, I'm really interested to see what happens with this Tigers-Mariners game between Tarik Skubal and Luis Castillo. Obviously, these are two of the best pitchers in baseball. Obviously, Tarik Skubal lit the baseball world on fire last year, winning that AL Cy Young. And I love Luis Castillo, obviously former Red, traded away. The thing is with Luis Castillo, that at least was a thing in Cincinnati that's kind of followed him, he's a slow starter. He has to take a few starts to get warmed up. Obviously, once the end of May and then once June hits, he is lethal and he is winning almost every start, or at least he should be if he has any run support. Thank you, Reds. But Tarik Skubal and Luis Castillo, that matchup is definitely standing out because I don't think that Tarik Skubal is a 7.2 ERA, two strikeouts per start kind of guy. I think he's still pretty good at tossing that baseball, even if, you know, if there's rumblings of that crazy rabbit ball making its way back into Major League Baseball with how many home runs people are hitting.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very much looking forward to that pitching matchup. And I'm also looking forward to the Paul Skeens, Ryan Pepiot matchup between the Pirates and the Rays. I mean, offensively, it's not a game that brings much excitement, but anytime Paul Skeens is on the mound, it's a game to watch. And Ryan Pepiot is kind of an unheralded pitcher down there in Tampa Bay, one of the guys that they've developed into being a very good pitcher. And breaking news, actually, right now, per MLB trade rumors, let me open this tweet right quick because this is coming in right now. The Padres are in agreement with star outfielder Jackson Merrill on a 9-year contract extension that guarantees the star $135 million, according to a report from Robert Murray of FanSided. The deal maxes out at $204 million and includes a club option for a 10th season that can be converted to a player option. That is all we know at this point. wow, Jackson Merrill and the San Diego Padres on an extension to end the show. Thoughts on that, Drew?
Fantastic investment by the Padres. You know, he hasn't been around for too long, and he's already he's only 21. He's almost 22 years old. He's already got a Silver Slugger. Like he's got one full season of Major League Baseball under his belt, and he put up 4.4 WAR, and he's an All Star and a Silver Slugger. Like, I love it. That's a really good investment. That's something that I'm really hoping that the Reds do with Matt McClain, because I've already resigned myself that Ellie De La Cruz is going to get traded because he's represented by, Scott Boras, and he doesn't play well with teams like the Reds. So I'm hoping that Matt McClain gets something like that done. But no, great for them, great for him. These baseball contracts are awesome, and I'm definitely hoping that my daughter is the first billion-dollar MLB baseball player.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There is a chance. But for Jackson Merrill, yeah, I agree. This is a great signing for the Padres and for Jackson Merrill. He's actually played in exactly 162 games between last year and now this year. And he's hit .296 with 25 home runs, 96 RBI. And 32 doubles, so and 170 hits with a 130 OPS plus. So he's been fantastic. He finished second in Rookie of the Year voting last year and ninth in MVP voting. So it's been a fantastic run for Jackson Merrill. And you know, he's one of those guys in center field who defensively is one of the best in baseball, and the National League is chock full of center fielders who are gunning for that gold glove and platinum glove every year, and Jackson Merrill is one of those guys. So I love this deal, man. Yeah, it's a good deal for both sides, and it's a great way to end the show. So again, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on that notification icon. We are trying to reach 500 subscriptions before the end of April, so help us get there. When we do reach 500 subscriptions, we will have a celebratory live stream, and we'll get that scheduled after we reach that point. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating, share it with your friends, let them know to go to firstpitchpodcast.com for news, notes, and updates on all things Major League Baseball. Follow the newsletter. Get it sent to your inbox every morning. I'm waking up at 5 a.m. here where I live every morning to write a newsletter on some big things going on in baseball the day before that we might not touch on in the podcast. So make sure you follow that podcast, follow that newsletter. I will leave the link in the description. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.